Going to kick things off. We want to welcome everyone that's on the line with us. My name is Jim Manker. I'm the Director of Business Development for the CSAC Finance Corporation. And we are excited about today's webinar with one of our partners, LinkedIn. Been a big fan of LinkedIn for a long time. And they just are real experts in workforce management, in economic development, and certainly during these days of what do we do when it comes to hiring the best people, finding the best talent, and then just navigating these crazy waters with this pandemic. So I don't want to take up any more time, but just want to welcome you on behalf of the California State Association of Counties. And I want to turn it over to Cecily and Jay and Jake and get this thing started. I'm gonna go on mute now. Thank you, Cecily.
Awesome, thank you so much for organizing this, Jim, and for everybody that's attending today. We're really excited about this first partnership opportunity with CSAC and driving a lot of impact in all of the counties that you guys are working in today. I'm gonna go ahead and let Jay and Jake introduce themselves first, and then I'll go in with my role here.
All right. So as I said, my name first, Jake, so I'll go. Hi, everybody. My name is Jay Carlisle. I'm effectively the general manager for LinkedIn's talent side of our business, which we can explain a little bit better later what that is. But all things talent when it comes to state and local government. So city, county, state, running up the government line there nationally. So thanks for having me here, Jake.
Thanks, Jay. Confusingly, my name is Jake with a K, and I work on workforce development and higher education systems for LinkedIn's learning solutions across North America, and specifically support our team in California as well. Over to you, Cecily.
Awesome. And my name is Cecily Hastings. I'm the dedicated relationship manager for the state of California, and I'm really excited to be partnering with you guys today. We've done a lot of work at the state level around workforce and economic development, as well as internal hiring priorities. And this is sort of our first foray into more scaled events in the county space. So we'll definitely welcome your feedback after the event and are excited to kick things off. I'm gonna start sharing the presentation here, and I'll walk you through the agenda for what we're gonna be covering today. So there's three main areas that we're gonna be focusing on in the presentation today. The first one is looking at the economic impact, both nationally and then within California. Then Jake will be covering skills gaps and the future of work, so where skills are going to be trending in light of COVID-19, how to place displaced workers, etc. And then we're going to talk about the future of county government based on some of the trends that we've seen today. So it should be a well-rounded session to both help you internally and also as you're trying to provide services to your constituents. So I'll kick it over to Jay now.
Awesome. Thanks, Cecily. So from a LinkedIn perspective, right, as a company, global company, we have a very, very good footprint when it comes to how we're looking at what's happening, literally, like I said, globally. So with 675 million members, we can get a good vantage point of what's unfortunately happening in the job reports as they're coming across, right? You've seen that the impact to jobs has been dramatic across the not only the nation, but the globe. But we're also looking at these, like I mentioned, globally from what's happening in some of the first hit areas of this virus. So like Asia Pacific, when it comes to China, Singapore, even Australia. And we're starting to see some signs of life coming from those areas. Jobs are starting to pick back up. While not recovering by any means, we're seeing jobs pick up. And also consumer confidence is coming back. And then also to note that every industry is being impacted differently. We don't have to go to the table on the right, but it's something we're monitoring very closely to see where different industries are being impacted and how they're being impacted, right? The one little red line there is networking technology and hardware. So we're all doing meetings like this and we're needing to work from home. So technology is, maintaining, if not growing, their footprint when it comes to employment. Next slide. And then while we are a global company, we're also very local. So we're trying to understand how this is affecting regions different, because every region is also being affected in a different way, right? Whether it be a major metro like San Francisco or a rural setting. I was talking to a Department of Transportation the other day, And in parts of this state, it's the State Department of Transportation, not county, but they're having very much different problems in the rural areas than they are in the urban areas, whether it becomes the jobs that they're needing or retirement or what that might be or who they're looking for. Next slide. And I think one thing that isn't talked about as much is there is still hiring taking place. There are jobs that are still in demand, whether it be public sector or private sector or across both, right? The left-hand column there, this is a LinkedIn report from, I believe it was March, showing the 10 most in-demand jobs across all sectors within the United States. And you can read them there, right? Store associate, system operator. It was still tax season, so I think CPAs were in high demand before the federal government pushed out tax season. But it changed quickly. So if you go to the right two tables, right, we're looking at in-demand jobs for April, the first 2 weeks. Those changed drastically, looking a lot more nursing, radiologists, doing things, almost health across the board, because health became just abundantly critical. And then the other thing that's become much more aware is that doing work remotely is extremely feasible. And then what jobs can be done remotely? So if you look at the bottom table, there's a lot of jobs that can be done remotely from wherever you are. So we're looking at all these things and trying to give our customers and just our municipalities insights as to where they can help the residents, but also their own organizations themselves. Cecily, back to you.
Awesome. So as we're looking at how this actually translates to county workforce programs and where you're trying to redeploy your staff, we're going to talk a little bit more about how the actual skills that go into these jobs are actually translatable for specific occupations that were impacted. But one thing to keep in mind here is, as we're seeing these surges, how are we focusing on reskilling the population and making sure we're directing people to these jobs? Obviously, we all know that certain industries have been impacted by unemployment, but if we're able to make those right connections and help people understand where their job can translate, that's helpful as we're trying to redeploy our workforce and examine where the future of work is heading in light of these new circumstances. So two of the key areas that we saw that could be done remotely or anywhere, and also places where we're seeing surges in need, are for sales and customer service jobs. So we've seen those in a lot of areas. We pulled this for California specifically to show you some of the top areas that are hiring today. So these are the people that had the most open jobs as of 2 days ago. It gives you a sense of the top 10 companies that are hiring within the state of California. One of the other things that we can look at are, what are the total number of jobs that are open in a given market? So you'll see Los Angeles has most of the jobs that are open right now, followed up by the Bay Area. So a lot of really interesting information there. If any of you are ever interested in looking at this at your county level specifically, like where are jobs open today, that's something that we're definitely happy to do with any of your teams and sit down and walk through. All this data is a little bit more applicable to you specifically, but this gives you a sense of some of the places, a combination of retail, but there's also things like Salesforce, or I was surprised to see Orange Theory Fitness on there, but they're actually hiring a bunch of sales professionals right now to assist with their online classes and trying to get more people enrolled in that. So it's a wide mix of companies, and there are a few surprises to me on this list. So hopefully that gives you some statewide context. And if you want to look at this more regionally, we're happy to dive into that and let you know where those open jobs are located. Ran a similar search for engineering. So this just gives you a sense of some of the places where we're seeing the most open roles today. Not a ton of surprises here. I think most people are familiar with most of these companies within the Bay Area, and not a huge surprise to see San Francisco expanding there. But if you're in some of those Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, Goleta areas, which is where I'm from, it was surprising to see the volume of jobs that are in that market as well. So again, if there's anything that we can do to help you on a regional basis to zero in on this information a little bit more, we wanted to give a statewide perspective today. So as you're thinking about what companies could we be partnering with, who is still hiring in light of the crisis, this gives you some good guidelines for where you might want to be focusing your time and effort based on the number of open roles and the ability to also do these jobs remotely. So even if you're not in one of these areas where those jobs are listed, a lot of these are jobs that could be done remotely, and people are trending more in that remote direction. And then the final area that from our broad data that we wanted to show today was our workforce confidence index. So this is something that we're actually tracking. I think it's on a biweekly basis, where we're looking at how confident are workers in the future of work, and how does that impact where things are heading. So one thing that's interesting here is public administration was at the top of the list at the time that this workforce confidence index was published, but it was also trending down. So as people over time are adjusting to the new normal, as we're starting to talk more about government bailouts, things along those lines, while you guys have been leading the charge as far as most competent industries, we are seeing that downward trend there, whereas something like design, recreation, and travel, media, and communications, those are starting to move back up and feeling more confident about the state of the economy. Something that's also interesting to see here is that we've got a number of jobs here that are actually government related when you look at functions like healthcare services, research, community and social services, and those are actually falling lower on the workforce confidence index. So if you guys are looking at from a county perspective, how is our workforce trending? How confident are they feeling? Those are some areas where if there's work that you guys can be doing to bolster confidence with your internal workforce as well, helpful areas to focus, because they're falling a little bit lower on that workforce confidence index list as it relates to how they're feeling about their future and their prospects. Was surprised to see healthcare falling lower there, but I know that we also have seen some layoffs for non-essential workers. So it's a great time for, if you're focusing on COVID response efforts, to be picking that talent up. Awesome. So now I'm going to hand it over to Jake, who's going to talk a little bit about the skills development piece of things.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Cecily. So it's great to be with everybody today. If you're seeing a slightly different light coming in from my side, it's because I'm actually in the other CA, which is to say I'm in Canada. And I thought that was actually an appropriate introduction to a slide on remote work, because to be frank, I've worked remote for the vast majority of my career, but I appreciate that I'm exceptional in that respect, and that's changing rapidly for much of the workforce. If there's one thing that there's a relative consensus around change in terms of COVID, it's going to be the increasing amount of remote work, with many companies already having established that individuals will remain remote. For instance, the largest Canadian Shopify has just announced that the vast majority of its workforce will remain remote indefinitely. And the implications of that are manifold. In the case of LinkedIn, we're trying to support across the different business lines commercially and pro bono based on our data, some of the information that Cecily and Jay have been sharing. And also, of course, based on our core flagship LinkedIn platform that you all use, in order to facilitate people doing everything from networking to finding a job remote. With that said, the area that I specifically focus on is learning. And so for the next few slides, I'm going to be talking about skills. But while we're still on this remote work slide, one thing I wanted to note is we have a variety of free resources that we'll make available after this call, specifically teaching individuals how to work remote. So there's a variety of courses and individual videos that we've grouped together in learning paths that, again, we've made free during the time of COVID in order to assist, whether it's a government worker who's learning for the first time to work remote or somebody that's being trained by that person. We're hopeful that our learning content and some of the information we're provided can help. Next slide, please. So these three slides are showing what, in my opinion, is amongst the most powerful aspects of LinkedIn's data. And again, the data at LinkedIn is based on what we call our economic graph, which Jay was referring to in terms of the 600 plus million members, tens of millions of jobs, tens of millions of companies, and each of those interrelated to validate data that, while if I, for instance, add a skill on my individual profile, might not be all that valid, once that's correlated to a job that somebody is paid to post, which also lists that skill, and then once you see that I and people like me have applied to and gotten that job and remained in that job, you can see how the validity of the association between that skill and that job increases over time, which is why some of these top 10 lists, like the one you're seeing right now, are actually often amongst the most valid data sets on what in-demand skills are in the world. We work with the World Bank, we work with the Department of Labor, and many others in order to demonstrate that and collaborate with them to to show the comparisons between public and our private information on these skills. And so what you're seeing here, honestly, are skills that we have known on the soft skills side, or what in academia would usually be called the foundational or human skills side, are how we've known for millennia are incredibly important. And yet we still have a hard time doing two things. One, teaching them, and two, communicating them. And when I say communicating them, I mean faculty members or trainers and career developers have a hard time explaining to individuals that agility, adaptability, creativity, teamwork are the essential skills. Those are by far the skills that are going to serve you the best throughout your lives. And then there's also a communication challenge on the part of employers. They tend to not enumerate these skills while they do list the technical skills on job postings, which creates a big portion of what we call the skills gap. And as a result, that skills gap is going to remain even under the current circumstances, where we have far more individuals looking for work than we have employed. With that said, you can see on the hard skills or technical skills list, things that obviously relate to California's economy in terms of technology and design, but also a huge amount of skills that are probably widely spread across your local regions: business analysis, marketing, sales. And part of what you'll see in the next few slides is how individuals can leverage some of those skills to transfer while they're moving into remote work, while they're looking for new opportunities, even while they're trying to build their competencies within a government bureau. You'll see the ability to, again, leverage skills that likely came from a completely or radically different field in their current or new occupation. Next slide, please. And so again, this is some of the coolest data that I think we have, because very few organizations have learning pathways or career pathways. When I started with LinkedIn up here in Toronto, Canada, one of our first projects was to look at how to get people in technology into those jobs fast, even if they came from a disadvantaged background. So if you had zero skills listed on your profile, if you had barely finished high school, how do we get you into a tech job fast and keep you in that job? And part of what we could do is look at the career and learning pathways of millions of other people who had similar profiles in order to help post-secondaries or help workforce development organizations or governments to figure out how they were going to invest, design curriculums, et cetera, to train for those transitions. So here, for instance, you're seeing flight attendant, a profession that's obviously not in demand at the moment, but you also see where all of those flight attendants most frequently move in terms of their career pathways. They come from a skill set that obviously involves everything from project management to teamwork to agility, and they take that to people skills, of course, human skills, and they take those skills and they can apply them as a salesperson. Right now, online sales is ramping up incredibly quickly. So there's, as Cecily was saying with regard to Orange Theory, lots of companies that you never would have thought of hiring salespeople online suddenly doing so. Well, now is an opportunity both for your workforce and those organizations to adapt quickly. And we hope that some of our data can help with that. Next slide, please. In other cases, you're seeing people who, for instance, worked in restaurants, and obviously the hospitality industry has arguably been hit harder than any other, transitioning into fields where they can take, again, those same skills. And in this case, for instance, perhaps they can become a teacher. Perhaps they can become, you know, a manager of a organization that deploys food, delivers food from online. Or, and this is sort of my favorite example, there is a ton of evidence to show that, for instance, bartenders make really good 911 call center responders. Who would have thought that, you know, the person you're ordering a drink from could the next week become the person who's answering the phone when you're in trouble? And yet, when you think about the skills that those individuals have, wanting to triage lots of crazy requests coming in at different times, enjoying the chaos, enjoying the interaction with people, you can see how LinkedIn's data is reinforced by anecdotal evidence of skills transfers. Next slide, please. And here, of course, you have one of the hardest hit professions. There's a lot less people taking taxis. Uber's obviously laying off its own employees as well. And that transition from an organization that was almost exclusively, and an individual exclusively focused on a service that requires that they be in close contact with a person, could transition to, for instance, a delivery role. Or again, we're seeing sales up here, we're seeing security officers, right? There's a huge need these days for security in a variety of different forms. And interestingly, that's actually a field that's relatively easy to transfer into. There are many roles that don't require extensive training or regulatory hurdles, et cetera. So all of this is to say there are lots of different ways that one can help individuals track their careers in a different direction as a result of the crisis. And there's tons of evidence on what skills are going to be most important to make those transitions that we're happy to help you with, even at the granular level that Cecily was pointing out earlier, specific to your county, specific to your region in the future. Next slide, please. And so this slide really comes to the core of my work. What I get really excited about is partnering with governments in order to create public-private partnerships that result in economies of scale. Like every other tech company, we sell software as a service. So for instance, on the LinkedIn Learning side, the more licenses you buy, the less it costs. And the challenge with that is that sometimes small organizations struggle to purchase licenses. And so what I ended up doing was, instead of originally selling LinkedIn Learning to colleges and universities across Canada, I partnered with governments. I worked with the government of Ontario, and they purchased 1 million licenses for every faculty, staff, and student in the province. And from that work, and now working with governments really right across America, we've worked with the California Workforce Association and Secretary Sue and her office. We've worked with the Texas Workforce Commission and the New York City Education Training Coalition. I've derived a few lessons that seem to be accurate really right across the board. And these lessons are particularly true in a crisis like this one, where organizations need to come together in order to fill the gaps that were created by a move online, by people being forced to stay at home, and by eventually likely cuts to either government services or other aspects of the economy. So the first is, we've known forever that education works best in a hybrid manner. You want to both teach online and teach offline. And when you're teaching in person, inevitably we're going to get back to in person, but in the meantime, you're going to want to have those faculty members or trainers or career developers spending their time, even your colleagues when they're mentoring their mentees, they're going to want to be spending as much of that in-person time actively in conversation, interacting. Whereas if somebody's trying to learn how to do project management or use Microsoft Excel, they should be doing that before the call as a pre-watch or a pre-read. The same is true in terms of the intersections of industries. To the extent that you can pull together your educational institutions with your government organizations, with your employers and private sector organizations, and having them all work on the same problem, those problems are going to get solved a lot faster. The last part is about actually forming these public-private partnerships and figuring out how to ensure that those partnerships actually result in opportunities even in the time of COVID. So for instance, the term work integrated learning often means internships or apprenticeships or co-ops. You can imagine there's tons of individuals who are planning on spending this summer working with either your government or a related organization, and those opportunities just don't exist anymore because people are working remote. There are all sorts of amazing ways of taking those remote apprenticeships, those remote internships, and moving them online so that they still can add value to your organization. But the key is to increase the collaboration with private employers, to increase the collaboration with civic society, and even to talk to organizations like us, organizations you might never have thought of interacting with around workforce development or employment, around career development, et cetera. And so I think the idea here is the closer we can work together, the more humanity we can bring back into a world that's obviously been challenged as a result of having technology forced on it in some ways that make work a lot more challenging. Back to you, Cecily.
Awesome, thanks, Jake. I think that the workforce opportunity on the LinkedIn side of things is one of the most exciting things that our organization's working on right now. We have about 84% of the California workforce that's on our platform, but unfortunately, some of those folks that aren't on there are the people that are actually coming through your county workforce centers and need our assistance the most. So I think the more that we can be doing to partner together to make sure that we're driving the impact that you need and getting the most value out of LinkedIn's network, our information on skills, and translating that into a way that models your future state economy. I think that the better we're all going to be. We want to get people back to work as soon as possible. I'm going to hand it over to Jay now, and we're going to switch gears to talk about some of the internal challenges that governments are facing today.
Thanks, Cecily. So I think we've been both monitoring, working with, talking to, and involved with governments for a number of years now. And right now it's created, you know, a time like no other where governments have had to do their job and with very little degradation and doing it all of a sudden from basically home, right? Some governments were able to pick up and run with that very quickly. They had, you know, some sort of VPN or remote work capabilities. Others did not. They had strict limitations when it came to technology usage from home computers and other things. So it's presented a lot of challenges, but also a lot of opportunities for governments to kind of rethink how they're organized. We were talking with some other government associations where they're talking about, you know, moving from disaster recovery and relief to a resurgence, right? And a lot of that comes with the resurgence of the government brand. I think it's been great to see all of our city, county, state leaders using their platform, whatever platform they have. Oftentimes it's LinkedIn, but there's many platforms that they've used to take a leadership role, right? The I'll keep chatting, right? There's been a lot of governors, a lot of county county executives that have had to take a leadership role with, you know, with what's been going on in their municipality, the locality, with their residents. And they've been doing so in stride and doing so from homes with less resources than they've ever been able to. And I think in the end, government has an awesome opportunity to build their brand, not only for like how they service the residents, but also what it's like to work for government. And there's critical talent out there that's still needed, right? A lot of governments are experiencing some sort of hiring freezes, but that hiring freeze, as we've talked to governments, differs from government to government, county to county, because there's still essential roles, essential services, again, defined differently, that need to be hired for. And there was a government in the Midwest, actually, that I was speaking with just last week, and he was adamant about how this window right now to find top talent is, it's narrow, but it's never been wider for government, right? There's a lot of things the government can offer that the private sector can't today. One of them sometimes is job security. You know, obviously that varies, but he's adamant that these pivotal roles where one great hire can do the job of three people, five people, 10 people, if they can secure this talent now, their organization, their agency will be tremendously stronger, you know, 10x exponentially stronger in the end. So there is a window right now where there's going to be talent that may not have looked at the public sector before that is looking for a lot of opportunities. And calling a spade, right? There's funding shortfalls. Governments are going to have to do more with less. That's the fact of the matter. There's tax revenues that have dried up almost overnight. I saw a statistic that said that the impact of government has been close to what it was in 2008, but it's happened almost overnight versus over the course of 2 years. So these are things that we're not going to be able to shy away from. But there is opportunity to be more strategic and do more with less, just as we said. So I'll give it back to you.
Awesome. So let's take a minute to look at how remote work is impacting government. So this is another study that we put out that actually shows how professionals across industries feel about their ability to work remotely. So you'll see public administration hovering in the middle there, sort of down closer to the bottom, some folks think that they're able to work remotely, but at the end of the day, there's key services that you have to deliver that are coming in person. So when you look at government's ability to go fully remote, it's a difficult challenge. So some of the things that make remote work difficult for government is you guys are boots on the ground really helping deliver services to your local community. And so some of those things can't be done remotely. I know we've seen trends in people doing more remote case management, or my mom used to work for California Children's Services, and they're now doing physical therapy remotely. So I think we've flexed and gotten creative in a lot of ways to deliver those services in new ways that were unexpected and still maintain some of that human connection. But at the end of the day, you still have to take your driving tests in person. You still have to go figure out, like, some of these services that you guys are delivering are going to have to be things that happen in person. There's also been cybersecurity challenges. So we've seen a huge uptick in the number of cybersecurity threats that are targeting governments post COVID-19, knowing that you guys have critical information and that's being exchanged more online than it ever has been before. So I think that that's been a major challenge that we've seen across the government sector. And before COVID-19, cybersecurity talent was in very high demand. So most of the governments that I've worked with have not had the right cybersecurity talent, which obviously poses critical risks. And then IT and collaboration, a lot of folks leading up to COVID-19 didn't have the IT infrastructure to actually be collaborating and working remotely. I know that people have adapted fairly quickly, but there's still stumbling blocks and collaboration issues that make it difficult to be continuing to work remotely. So some tips from our team that we've been looking at what's working well across industries and across organizations. One of the things that's most important is to create a remote community. Disengaged workers or people being less productive has been something that we've seen as we've printed remote. So one of the ideas that actually our partners at CPS Consulting had come up with, and we'll send this over as one of the resources that we had, is they actually have a template for daily stand-up meetings, and then at the end of the day, is where they'd state something that they want to have done. And then at the end of the day, they actually close that out with another team meeting, which keeps employees engaged and feeling that sense of community, but it also helps them anchor on specific tasks that they're trying to accomplish on a given day. Clear leadership and consistent communication and contact. I think sometimes as government leaders, you're being pulled in a million different directions, but your employees are one of the most important assets that you have. So finding ways to have virtual forums, confronting some of those tough issues. It's easier for people to hear things up front and directly. So at LinkedIn, we've actually rolled out weekly meetings from the leadership at our organization that give us a chance to ask questions directly to our CEO, our C-level executives, so that we're better able to feel like we're being heard and that the questions that we have aren't being ignored. And there's not a lot of ambiguity around where the company's heading and what this crisis is going to mean for us. And then also remote team building. I think a lot of people are, especially extroverts, are suffering more from depression, and we're seeing those levels rise, and that mental health is so important. But finding ways to stay connected. So whether that's, we had some virtual scavenger hunts, just finding ways to meet up and have coffee, pairing up mentors and mentees together. This is a great time to be doing that, even though we are remote. But it's a great time, as people might have a little bit less on their plate in some roles, to be able to be mentoring and working together. So if there's ways to launch those types of programs, we've seen those landing really well and also helping foster some of that sense of community. In the secondary area, recognizing achievements is now more important than ever. This helps combat that disengagement that we talked about. So there's a few ways that you can do that on LinkedIn. One of the easiest ways for government leaders to help build community across teams is to pick out an individual that's done really great work and talk about what that individual is doing and mentioning them by name on LinkedIn. Not only does that usually make the individual really proud if a county CEO has recognized them, but it also helps their team members feel like that the work that the team is doing is being recognized. So it's something that we've really seen actually have a tangible impact on the amount of engagement that we see both on those posts. But tangentially, I've heard some of the organizations that I work with that are doing this have actually seen that the teams that are leading this charge are actually then more engaged, and employees internally as well. Another thing that people can really rally around right now is how are you impacting the community? So making sure you're getting that story out there. There's tons of stories that are showing that today. I actually just shared a post this morning from the Department of General Services. Their Deputy Director of Administration highlighted that their team had actually raised $2,500 to actually deliver meals to homeless individuals that were living in hospitals right now. And they'd actually bought the meals from the local cafeteria that had been suffering as a result of COVID-19. So there was multiple levels of impact that were being had there. But I think that that's a great example of taking something that your team is doing and tangentially pulling other people in. It feels good to know that you're having an impact on your community. We're all struggling right now. But I think that that's incredibly important. And then also, those are ways you can do that on LinkedIn. Internally, encouraging a culture of recognition. So while you might be recognizing people, also your direct reports or people that are managing teams, the more that we can get people engaged and recognizing employees during this time, the more everybody is going to be engaged as a whole. Third area encouraging wellness. So one of the things that was most helpful to me that that LinkedIn has done is we actually mandated a day off in the middle of all of this because people weren't taking as much vacation time and there wasn't as much work-life balance that was happening. I think sometimes when you're in your home, you don't have those same boundaries as physically driving into an office or out of it. So letting people know that it's okay for them to still need space or to take an hour lunch break or whatever that looks like is incredibly important as we try to protect the mental health of our employees during this time. Group meditation or reflection, more people can be thinking about how they're feeling during this time, the better they're able to process those emotions. I've heard of teams doing health and wellness challenges on their own, which also reinforces that sense of community. So whether that's let's see how many steps we can get together as a team, or let's cross 100,000 steps in a month or whatever that looks like, that helps keep employees engaged and active. We've had team members that have actually led remote fitness classes. So if you have someone that is a yoga instructor part-time or something along those lines, that can be a way to pull people together and continue to have them focused on their well-being. And then also, if you have any resources around mental health or ways that employees can get help, one of the things that we're seeing as a negative out of this is that we're actually seeing increasing rates of depression and things along those lines. So making sure that people are actually feel comfortable addressing those issues that are coming up are incredibly important. When it comes to constituent services, there's a lot of ways that you can be getting information out to the public using LinkedIn. So both on LinkedIn, but also you probably want to have a communication strategy that's reaching people in different areas. You want to be directing people to online resources. Sometimes people forget about doing that on LinkedIn, but you probably have a lot of followers on your company page that are looking for this type of information. We've actually seen huge surges in the number of people who want to volunteer and feel like that they're giving back. So California Volunteers, which I think has been redeploying into the county level, but they actually asked for people with healthcare services and were completely inundated within 48 hours. So people are eager to be giving back during this time. And then as you're thinking about how to expand your reach beyond maybe just the followers that are on your page, making sure you're leveraging hashtags, going and getting the information into the right relevant groups on LinkedIn, and also tagging other agencies that you're partnering with or the state of California or things like that so that you guys can cross-pollinate that message is incredibly important because we're all working together here on the local level, counties, state level. Everybody is doing things that can be helpful to your local community, and the more that we can drive that cross-pollination through tagging organizations, the better you're going to be able to reach the public. The final area is the right talent and tools. So making sure that we're leveraging the momentum, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, that's the positive momentum that's coming towards the government space. So we're seeing a lot more people considering careers in government service for critical roles that have typically been difficult. One of the clients that I work with sent out, I think, around 250 in-mails for a CIO position and actually got a 90% response rate, which was unheard of before COVID-19. So as you're thinking about the future of where you're trying to take government and those skills gaps, this is a great time to be looking at workforce planning and where we're heading and start cultivating that talent pipeline. There's also a ton of free resources that are out there today. We're going to talk about some of the things a little bit later on that LinkedIn and Microsoft have been doing. But private sector companies are eager to help government during this time. So making sure you're reaching out and understanding the resources that are available to you. I think that there's more available now than there ever has been historically, at least from the LinkedIn side of things. So making sure you're capitalizing on that. And then also figuring out where those gaps are and making sure that you have a strategy in place to fill them. I think sometimes when there's funding cuts and things like that coming through, it's easy to downplay things like workforce planning or the recruiting initiatives that you've been working on. But this is a really critical time to understand where that's at. And if you end up in a situation where you don't have the right talent pipeline in place, that can potentially cause issues like you have to pay more for contractors. So while you're trying to reduce costs, it actually ends up costing more. There's a lot of examples of these. So making sure you know where those critical gaps are going to be and reaching out to the right partners to make sure that. So I'm going to pass it over to Jay to talk a little bit more about what we're seeing in government and the surge that we're seeing in interest from the public.
Awesome. Thanks, Cecily. And yeah, I saw in the chat that there may be some audio issues. I'd be curious if it is one of us in particular or if it's just the larger connection. So apologize for some of the audio difficulties. I will be brief here, but I'm just, as we were talking about hashtags, I've got my #LoveForGov t-shirt on. So I've definitely been very proud of what many of our municipalities, again, from city, county, all the way to the state has done as far as leadership goes. There's been, I think it's a 26% increase in the amount of government administration content that's been posted onto LinkedIn since this crisis hit. And people have been going to LinkedIn for the truth. There's studies out there, it's Business Insider if you want to do a quick Google search, that has showed that LinkedIn is the trusted place for information, especially in today, you know, people keep, it's overplayed now, but the term fake news comes up. But there is a lot of it out there and you need to sift through some of the clutter. And LinkedIn has proven time and time again, year after year, to be the trusted place, not only for information, but for news. And we've seen our government senior officials and administrators taking to LinkedIn to tell their stories and making sure the word gets out there. So it's been a great platform to see. A lot of this is just organic content, right? Free posts that people have been making to get their word out to their followers and to their the residents and those that are interested to hear what they say. So. In times of crisis, government needs to take a leadership position, and I think our local governments have done just that. So I've been extremely proud of it. Next slide. Some of this we've already talked to, so I won't belabor anything too terribly much. But for government that is looking to maintain a presence when it comes to their brand, right? Talent never stops, right? You're either building a brand. I've always been told that your reputation is your brand and your brand is your reputation, right? And every interaction you have either builds upon your brand and reputation or diminishes it. Or if somebody is doing so loudly or more impactfully or more vocally, you know, they're taking a little bit of the spotlight. So for those of you in a hiring capacity, you may not be hiring today for your own organization, but you can still build your brand. You can still do talent outreach. You can still tell people what it is like to work for your county and why you should work for your county. What's your employer value proposition? Let people know that, you know, we may not be hiring right now, but you're somebody that we look for when hiring starts back up. And then we've heard time and time again that government job descriptions aren't always the best as far as how they're translatable to the private sector, just people coming out of college. Right? Everyone doesn't always know what a program manager for does, right? So maybe senior program manager or whatever the case may be, but looking at titles, job descriptions, and taking this time to really give them a hard and fast look and see how they could be improved upon or at least made a little bit more, I guess we'll say, dissectable for the private sector and people that may not have always looked at the public sector as a place of employment. Kind of mentioned the talent brand a little bit in the first part, so I won't belabor that one, but you know, your talent brand is part of your employer value proposition and what people think of you as an employer when they hear about, you know, the county of X, Y, and Z. And then lastly, from the event standpoint, I know a lot of governments have always looked to university career fairs and hosting their own career fairs and different on-site events that have been had to move virtually. And whether LinkedIn we've got LinkedIn Live and LinkedIn events that people are looking for ways to repurpose some of the events that they would have gone to in person, but doing so virtually, right? People are looking at ways to get their message out to people in a virtual fashion. And career fairs is a way to do such. And again, those are being moved virtually regularly right now. Next slide.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Jay. One thing to note about those job descriptions is I think if there's ways that you can actually tie the impact of that the job is going to have on the community, we are seeing a lot of interest in public service because of the way that that people can give back. So I think that the more that we can do to focus on that impact and the purpose and the public good within job descriptions and or company updates, the better off you're going to be and then the more organic reach you're going to have. So as we look at some of these critical roles where we have seen healthcare hire or surges in hiring, We wanted to dive into a few areas that where you guys might want to be looking as you're thinking about your recruiting strategy for those roles where we've heard that you have shortages. So one of those is healthcare. So this gives you the top 10 healthcare hires or the people that have healthcare talent within the state of California. So as you're looking at where can we go to get that nursing talent? I know also, like, for example, Stanford's up there and they just actually laid off several nurses. So if there's county shortages in your local health systems, these are great companies to look at for, are there ways that we can grab some of that talent in light of the current circumstances? Similarly, with public safety, we've seen police hiring was hard enough before COVID-19, and it hasn't gotten any easier. So if you're looking for people in public safety careers, sheriffs, things along those lines, this gives you a sense of some of the top people that are employing that public safety talent. Also, as we're looking towards veterans, we have a really strong partnership program with retiring veterans as they're coming out of their service. So LinkedIn's a great place to go to try to pick up some of that talent as they're leaving the military. And then finally, for cybersecurity talent, this gives you the top 10 companies in California that have that cybersecurity talent today. And then when we look at, I know student recruiting is on hold a little bit right now for people, and the students are feeling equally lost. We actually have a Cal State webinar for graduating students happening next week on how to best use LinkedIn to find jobs. But the flip side of that is you're probably still looking for some of that entry-level talent as well. So if you're looking for ways to augment entry-level talent pipeline or pulling people into these key roles, these are the top 10 educational institutions that are producing the talent. So as you're thinking about where should I be focusing to bring in our next generation of talent, these are some of the schools that would be most helpful for you. And then the final area that we're going to talk about today is we know that there's rising costs and also revenue shortfalls that are being burdened on counties right now across the board. So I know that you guys are both losing tax revenue and also being asked to do more from programs than you ever have before. We understand where you're coming from and we want to make sure that we're helping. So with that, as you guys are starting to encounter these challenges, we wanted to put out there some of the things that can be done for free. I mentioned earlier that there's a lot of organizations that are stepping up, but if your team's having trouble with remote work, for example, Microsoft Teams is offering a six months free for those roles. On the LinkedIn side, we can offer free healthcare positions if they're COVID frontline right now. And that's something that we've rolled out programmatically to assist with your healthcare hiring. And the LinkedIn Learning has unlocked some of those learning paths. So we'll compile a list of the free resources on the LinkedIn side, but I would also encourage you to reach out to other partners that you have and look at, in light of the current situation, what they're offering, because I know that there's a lot that's out there. So in follow-up, we will make a comprehensive list of those resources and send over some of the things that we've been rolling out for governments to assist in light of the crisis. The second thing that we wanted to look at was one of the things that I've been struck by since moving to work with governments. I used to work with private sector clients before this, is a lot of times decentralized budgets actually don't track spending effectively. So I've seen this mostly on the talent acquisition side of things, but I don't think I have yet to have walked into a meeting with an HR professional. If somebody on the line already has this, then I will be thrilled to be speaking with you, because I'd love to roll this out across other governments. But I haven't ever been able to actually get a direct number since moving into public sector service of the cost per hire at a particular organization. So as we're looking at this constrained budget environment, making sure that we've done an audit that's not just each department managing their own costs and looking at what are the costs that are associated, what's costing our agency the most money right now, and then how can we reduce those costs, I think would be a really helpful thing to do, because I think right now a lot of those departments are operating in silos and it's not actually tracking back that the impact that that's having across the counties. And that's really the first step as you're looking at cost reduction, like centralizing those costs and understanding what is costing the most is an important place to start. And then finally, once you have that comprehensive view, what can be done for less? So one of the things that I've heard a lot about is like, how are we moving things remote? What can be done today that is going to be a more efficient way of doing things? A lot of that comes down to having the right technology in place. So I know Jake had earlier mentioned LinkedIn Learning as an example. So a lot of times in-person training can be quite costly, but being able to have a solution that for a matter of dollars per employee is scaling impact. Sometimes that might be a better solution to continue to upskill your workforce and making sure that you're putting things in the right areas. So we're continuing to evaluate these issues, and we have a series of webinars on the LinkedIn side of things that we can send an invite over to as well. But we're actually hosting a virtual conference if you're interested. That's looking at how human resources and talent acquisition will be shifting over time as a result of COVID-19. We have our lead economist that's going to be on that call as well. So we can send over the information for that, but just wanted to make sure you had a sense of that we're continuing to gauge on these topics and are looking forward to continuing to serve your team. So we can open it up now. We'll go ahead and stop sharing the screen, but we can actually open up if there's questions for the folks on the line. It looks like I was the one that had the audio issues here. I'm seeing some of these chats now.
As we wait for folks' questions, I know we got one a little further up. As I was speaking in the chat on how we're working with California around workforce development. At a high level, we've been both engaging with the state, as I mentioned, as well as a variety of counties, cities, and workforce boards on how we can support them, both in terms of our learning content. So how could we get access to them for LinkedIn Learning content so that they could then train individuals remote at home during this crisis, and then they could reemerge stronger with new skills and get into jobs, but also how Jay and Cecily's team can support them with our job matching technology by driving individuals to their career pages, to the jobs that they're posting, and by helping them identify opportunities in the labor market, even during this time when it is obviously not as tight as it had been just before the crisis. So with all that said, as I said, we're talking at different levels. If there are specific conversations that you're interested in, whether it's with the California Workforce Association, you know, we talked to Bob Lanter once every couple of weeks and have been working closely with his organization, as well as I said, a variety of boards, or whether it's with county officials looking to specifically support the jobs that they're looking to hire for or train for. We're here to help, and I'm happy to get into more detail.
Awesome. And then somebody had asked if we could share well-done job descriptions, and we can certainly add that into the resource follow-up.
Definitely don't be shy, and definitely also ask us other questions for follow-up. We're happy to provide you a variety of the resources that that Cecily mentioned while she was speaking, but if you could elaborate on them, that would be helpful too. Sorry, Cecily, go ahead.
No, I was going to see if there was any other questions that were out there. So we've got another question coming in from the feed. Can you address where you've seen these changes or pivots happen quickly? I've seen some departments working for years to change job descriptions with union concerns. How can governments make these changes quickly? I can talk about what I've seen. I think that the state agencies in California have undergone a major transition recently, and I think that it comes from just leadership at the top saying that they're going to be making those changes. Certainly engagement on LinkedIn or shifting a job description or things like that. I understand that there is some union pushback about getting folks in the door, but I think that it comes down to just really being willing to make those changes and to move quickly. If there's a specific concern that has come up with unions and you want to elaborate on that, I could speak to that. But I think at the state level, there was a universal decision that they were going to start innovating in these areas. And once they started executing on that, it's all really funneled down from there. So it was just leadership deciding we need to be doing things differently, and then empowering the various departments to feel like that they can start moving in a different direction. Any specific departments or roles, types of roles that are stand out? I'd say that we've seen a lot of success with public safety, hiring, healthcare, things along those lines. And I can send over some examples of that. And yes, we will share our presentation with the attendees as well.
And I must say that there's really a divide here between how quickly governments have responded. And I think there is the opportunity to look to, I'm very biased by being up here in Canada, but as an example, both the federal government in the States and a number of state governments were able to get some money out to people in days. And so you could see how they transformed some systems very quickly, and then other systems. Obviously, the unemployment insurance system has been really challenged in many, many states across the US. And some of the cyber attacks that Cecily have described would also suggest that states be cautious in how quickly they change. That said, I think there are many, many examples, whether it's the relaxing of regulations around signatures or remote learning and work, that of states and of counties moving very, very quickly in this time, much more quickly than arguably they've ever moved in at least our lifetimes. And if you'd like to be put in touch with some of the governments who have been able to dramatically change how they hire, how they work remotely, how they communicate with their residents and citizens, we'd be happy to make those connections as well.
One other thing to note while I was talking about the state level for the job description piece of things, I think that a lot of state agencies, what they ended up doing, this is getting back to the union concerns as well, they still have on Cal Careers, like the traditional job posting that was there before. What they've shifted is the way that they're actually pushing that out to job boards and LinkedIn. So it's not about, that's viewed as like a marketing or an advertising type of push rather than like an actual job posting. So that was something that I did want to clarify, just because as you're thinking about your job descriptions, it might become the type of thing where you actually have to have two job descriptions if those regulations aren't syncing up based on the rules that you have in place within your county.
And Cecily, correct me if I'm wrong, you have some customers that are also looking at, I forget what the tool is, but it's like a gender-neutral word decipher tool to find out if their job descriptions are gender biases or words that are more masculine focused. So correct. Something else to be considered.
Yep.
There was another more direct question to me on the chat around workforce development. And in particular, it was about how do economies that were hit particularly hit hard as a result of, for instance, being dependent on hospitality, how should they be reimagining themselves in order to move forward? And I think there's a few key lessons there. One is that people should be learning, as I said earlier, the broad skills. We don't necessarily know what's going to be the hot industry in your region in 6 months, even if that, for instance, was easier to tell pre-COVID. On the other hand, we do know that if they have some of those core foundational human skills and basic digital literacy, your economy as a whole will be much better prepared for any future transition. And so the baseline is start training in those skills for now, and then start also thinking about those lists that we showed earlier where you can see people in one industry. We can get you them specifically.